Really interesting about this petition, about this manifesto, though, were the methods proposed, something about the intensity, the extremism of this movement. It was declared that peasants would destroy the old order in Russia in a violent uprising, and that was their goal, to inspire peasants to rise up and exterminate the old order. And this violence that they talked about was not simply necessary, but it began to be treated, at least in this manifesto, as glorious. Unlike most leaflets of the period, which warned, if you don't improve conditions, those peasants are going to rise up and there will be a bloody conflagration that needs to be avoided. This one said, no, on the contrary. It treated it as a good thing to be looked forward to. It reveled, this manifesto, in imagining such violence. It described in great detail rivers of blood that will flow down the streets and the villages. It described peasants destroying, but it also noted that only militant and conscious intellectuals could build the new order, could make sure that all the old ways were removed. And the manifesto called for the creation of a dictatorship of elites who would, as they put it, stop at nothing. All of this, you can probably see, are echoes of Jacobin radicalism from France of 1792 and after, which was well known to them. Now, proclamations that were this extreme actually alienated many liberals. Even people, old radicals like Herzen himself, found this extreme sort of statement to be really too much. These fears of the radical movement were in fact reinforced by a series of suspicious fires that broke out in Petersburg in the summer of 1862. Many felt radical students had probably set these fires, and many considered one man to be to blame, 34-year-old writer named Nikolai Chernyshevsky. Editor of the most leading radical journal of the day, The Contemporary, that was allowed to publish legally, and surprising how much was allowed, but an indication of the liberalized censorship rules, at least at this point. And many suggest that if he either was the inspirer of these actions, of these radicalism and of these fires, or at least, if not directly in charge. Hoping to stop the movement, the government actually arrested Chernyshevsky in July of 1862, sentenced him to 7 years in prison and a lifetime of exile to Siberia, where he died shortly after returning, a few months before after returning in 1889. It's worth trying to understand something about Chernyshevsky's ideas, because they tell us something about what was inspiring students. They all read Chernyshevsky. Concretely, he had the usual list of popular ideals: communal economic reforms, emancipation and equality of women, complete civil rights, democratic government, and the like. But even more telling and more influential were his philosophical ideas, which were called by him rational egoism. Though in fact, these ideas in many ways were drawn on his reading of European philosophers. This time, the choice was the utilitarians, especially Jeremy Bentham and John Stuart Mill. It was egoism in the sense what was most important in the world, he said, were individual needs, individual happiness. This has to be the basis of all morality. But it was rational egoism, he argued, and many were influenced by this, by the notion that one's self-interest, one's egoism, truly lies in seeing the greatest benefit among the largest number of people. You're an egoist? Everybody's an egoist. And to respect their own individual needs and rights was essential to creating a happy world. Concretely, this means your self-interest lies in the well-being of all people. And then, he argued, elaborating beyond the European utilitarians, an egoist understands that his real interests lie in cooperation and therefore in socialism. This all led to a logical argument for socialism. Not the most brilliant set of philosophical ideas, but still very compelling because it seemed scientific. And this is an important aspect of this. On the one hand, you can see he places the individual at the center of his arguments, just as Herzen and Belinsky did, and advocates socialism as they did on this basis. But he packages these ideas as rational and scientific. And this was very much part of the spirit of his age. This was, after all, the age of Darwin. Origin of the Species was published in 1859 and widely read. Karl Marx was arguing for scientific socialism in these years. But I'd suggest you at least question how scientific these ideas were, though the packaging was part of its appeal.